This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Dr. Molan Merchant, Dean of the English Department, University of Exeter, Devon, England. Tonight's subject, Shakespeare on Love. You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Tonight we continue our look at love on Night Call with our first transatlantic program. Standing by in Exeter, England, at the University of Exeter, is Dr. Moylan Merchant, Shakespearean scholar and head of the English department at the university. If you'd like to ask Dr. Merchant a question on tonight's topic, Shakespeare on Love, or make a comment on the immortal bard, call us here at Night Call. Now, the number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere, collect. Please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Our operators are now on duty. The lines are open. And if you have a question that you'd like to direct toward the good doctor in Exeter, England, just give us a call here at Night Call. Remember, this is our first transatlantic program on Night Call. The number, area code 313-846-6601. Dr. Merchant, how did Shakespeare view love?
Well, I think that's pretty well the central question for the whole of his drama. If you start right at the beginning with a very early play like The Taming of the Shrew, Shakespeare appears to be simplifying the whole problem very much and saying the only possible relationship between men and women is the absolute dominance of one. And not unnaturally, starting as a young man, he says the dominant has to be the male. And you remember the story that Petruchio simply batters down the resistance of Catherine until she's a submissive shrew at the end. But the amazing thing is to see, as Shakespeare goes on with his play, the way in which this becomes more and more subtle and refined. Until at last, of course, in the great comedies, which he was writing just about the end of Queen Elizabeth's reign, and before James I came to the throne, he's got the most amazing feminine role, where the women in love seem always to be in love with men who are somehow inferior to them in quality, and yet they are raised up to the quality of the women by the love that the women have for them.
Well, why this change, then? Why does Shakespeare change in his view of love?
I think because he was gradually growing up.
Would you say that this is typical?
That this was a central fact in people's lives and became more and more mature in this, then this love had to be something very much more than dominance or desire and had to be a proper relationship between two human beings.
What is a proper relationship?
Well, I think a relationship which is absolutely mutual. That where the two personalities lock together and really complement each other.
Do you think we achieve this in the modern world?
I don't think anybody does. I don't think Shakespeare knew how to achieve this. The thing is, a constant struggle. And it has to be a constant struggle where each partner is maintaining the relationship at a very high emotional and, of course, intellectual pressure all the time.
Do you think...
Well, I think a subtle person like Shakespeare has so much to contribute to our understanding of that problem.
Do you think that today we put too much stress on the emotional end of love and not enough on the intellectual?
Oh, I'm quite sure we do. I'm quite sure that we're much too romantic about the problem altogether and don't give it anything like the thought that a person like Shakespeare did in his day.
Well, now, in his day, was Shakespeare advanced in regards to his views on love compared to the average?
Of course, in a way, it's very bad luck on a number of other dramatists and poets that Shakespeare ever lived. I think but for the existence of the plays and the poems of Shakespeare, we would be thinking that another 10 dramatists and poets were just as great. He's got the edge on them. But I think it's quite obvious, for instance, that Ben Jonson and the poet John Donne would be regarded as supreme masters in any age. And it's just that they're overshadowed by the giant. Now, someone like John Donne has very, very acute things to say about love. Things that Shakespeare says perhaps more dramatically and in some ways more richly in his verse.
What about Bryant?
I'm sorry?
What about Lord Bryant?
Oh, well, yes, but of course that's 2 centuries later. And while he's very rich and subtle too, it's not got the pressure that Shakespeare has.
Do you think Shakespeare, then, is saying more about love than any of the modern writers?
Oh, a very great deal. Of course, in so many ways, I imagine that the pressures of our modern age, especially the enormous movement of population from place to place and so on, the kind of thing that we call rootlessness, this is something that Shakespeare hadn't to cope with to anything like the same extent.
Why do so many of Shakespeare's lovers end up tragically in the plays?
A lot of them do, but I think it's a mistake to think of the love stories exclusively as tragic. I wonder, would we have time now to discuss one or two?
Why, certainly.
Well, if you think of the two greatest, one of the fairly early comedies, Twelfth Night, where Viola, the brilliant young girl who disguises herself as a man, to live in the court of Duke Orsino. She falls in love with Duke Orsino. Now, I think Duke Orsino is a bit of a stick. I think he's rather stuffy. And not, I think, particularly brilliant. But by the time Viola's love has been completely revealed to him in the play, Orsino is absolutely transformed. And Viola really makes him into the man that he was potentially.
Well, is it Viola or Viola's love?
Ah, well, you can't separate them. Their love is very much the center of her being, and this is what gives her real existence. And then right at the end, where I suppose a play like The Winter's Tale could have been tragic, it in fact ended in quite radiantly when the two people have been separated for 16 years because the king thinks that Hermione has been dead, finds her restored to him, and the whole play ends again quite radiantly. Now, of course, there are love stories in Shakespeare that are very tragic, but for all kinds of quite different reasons. It's a failure not necessarily in love, but a failure in some other aspect of their lives.
Would you say that one reason that Shakespeare is still read today is because he dealt with such basic emotions?
Oh, yes, I'm quite sure. I mean, when you think, for instance, that you get such a basic fact as ambition explored in Macbeth. Ambition explored in a political way as well as a personal and human way, which parallels so many of the hatreds that we find in society between nations and so on. If you want the exploration of a dictator, I suppose you've got it there. It's the same with Coriolanus, where a quite different sort of dictatorship is explored. You've got race relations explored in two such plays as Othello and The Merchant of Venice. The fundamental problem of practically all our national and human matters today are explored by him.
Would you say that he deals more with love than he does with hate?
Well, I suppose if I were a psychologist, I would have to say that they are so very complementary the one to the other that the two things come perilously near.
Well, what do you mean that they're complementary to one another?
Well, again, I prefer to talk about a particular example. I suppose the greatest of the tragedies, you would say, was King Lear. There you've got a love which is very complicated because you've got, on the one side, the love of parents for children, and on the other side, the love between men and women. At those two levels, Shakespeare is exploring the whole thing in about as complicated a way as he can. But there's one tremendous moment right at the beginning of the play. Lear is asking his three daughters, "How much do you love me?" And now that is fundamentally a nonsense question. It's a question nobody can ask. How much is a quantitative question. You're asking to have the thing weighed. As a matter of fact, Lear is going further than that. He says, "If you tell me how much your love weighs, I will match it by the number of acres I'll give to you as a reward." And one of the daughters, as a matter right from the beginning, loves him most, says, "Now what have you to say, Cecilia?" And she says simply, "Nothing."
Our guest tonight, Dr. Moylan Merchant. Our topic, Shakespeare on Love. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our guest tonight, Dr. Moylan Merchant from the Department of English at the University of Exeter in Exeter, England. And we have the good doctor speaking direct from England tonight on our first transatlantic Night Call program. If you'd like to make a comment on Shakespeare or Shakespeare on Love, which is our topic tonight, give us a call here at area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make it collect. We'll pay the bill. That's area code 313-846-6601. The operators are on duty, the lines are open, so let's hear from you. And here's your chance to talk to the good doctor right in England right now. So give us a call at area code 313-846-6601. Doctor, I have standing by in Colorado, in Westminster, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mr. Herbert DeFries. Good evening, Herbert. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
Fine. I would like to ask a couple of questions with regard to some of the comments that Dr. Merchant has made. One of our American displaced poets, we might say, I suppose, who lived and died in England in his later years, talked about Shakespeare's time as reflecting love as the aesthetic of sex at that time, whereas today in the 20th century, having gone through the filter of the 19th century, we have the science of lust now. Does that strike anything with regard to the comments regarding thought, giving thought to love by Shakespeare as opposed to too much emotion today?
Doctor?
Yes, I think that's a very acute question. If you make the contrast which you're making between the aesthetics of love in Shakespeare's day and our cult of lust, I think that Shakespeare was quite aware of the latter, and there is no doubt that that lust is explored in a very painful and tragic way by him. But equally, it's the subtler side, the more delicate exploratory side, where both as an art and as a matter for thinking and exploration, his great lovers are really probing each other's personalities and all the time extending their possibilities.
Quite so, sir. However, I wonder if, adjunctive to this question, then, we might not wonder about this, where in Shakespeare's time, the women lovers, were played by young boys because of the exigencies of the stage as far as religion was concerned in England. If not perhaps this probing of personalities, this interest in the intellectual side, as you put it, of love, is not in not putting the lovers together as we might do, for instance, in our more blatant romances of the screen and of the boards today.
Well, I think that there's certainly something in that. Shakespeare was, of course, perfectly capable of using his instrument as the instrument was put in his hand.
Yes,
but at the same time, we have got a laboratory or clinical cross-check on this.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Would you say that again, please?
Shakespeare's own poems and the poems of his contemporaries, where there's plenty of passion, plenty of emotion, plenty, if you like, of lust. But at the same time, this whole emotion of love and this whole thinking about love is explored so very much further than anybody but our contemporary poets appear capable of doing. So that I don't think it's simply the fact that boys were playing the female role on the stage. You see, do you feel, for instance, if I may send the question back to you, that now that the female roles in Shakespeare's plays are played by women, and very frequently very powerful and attractive women, that they are, so to speak, held, reined in, by the fact that there is a lack of emotion in the characters?
A lack of emotion in the characters with regard to the women or
yes.
to the men? The paramours or to the lovers? The lovers or the paramours?
The lovers and the wives.
I see. Are you asking whether we reflect on the stage then the thing that Shakespeare was trying to put across perhaps in the 17th century, or are we saying that we should play it with regard to more sex? I don't quite understand what you mean.
Let me put it more precisely. In a part like that of Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, or Viola in Twelfth Night, I would have thought that despite the fact that each of those parts was played by a boy in the 17th century, even if a woman is playing it now, she still feels that she's very feminine when she's playing those two roles. I don't think that Shakespeare was cutting down on the feminine nature in either case.
I see your point. Yes, it's quite well taken.
Well, Herbert, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
My pleasure.
Our time's just about up, Mr. Herbert DeVries. From Westminster, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. Doctor?
Yeah?
We were talking about the emotions of love and hate.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, do you think that we could learn anything from Shakespeare as to how to love and how to hate?
Well, yes. I think, for instance, in a play that always causes a great deal of heart-searching, especially in our own day, a play like The Merchant of Venice, quite obviously there, the whole matter of hate is explored right up to the end of the fourth act. And then suddenly, something that people don't realize very frequently when they see the play, the love with which the whole of this conflict between Shylock and Antonio and Bassanio is surrounded, suddenly transforms the whole thing. And the Duke of Venice says that you may know the difference between you and us. He suddenly forgives the whole situation. And the Jew is taken up into the possibility of a quite new relationship with the Christians there. I think that in this kind of work, so many things are opened up by Shakespeare, which are directly in our own line of thinking.
What are some other basic things that we might learn about love from Shakespeare? Does he ever tell us that you have to do certain things to have certain types of love happen?
Our relationship to time and patience and the way in which we must be prepared to wait, not to hurry. The fact that, for instance, you get one or two wonderful passages where Shakespeare is exploring exactly this. Viola is speaking of herself. She's pretending that she's speaking of a younger sister. She says that this sister has to wait. She sat like patience on a monument, smiling at grief. She says a little later, "Time, thou must untangle this, not I." And so the whole thing, right at the end, in that play that I've already mentioned, which I think is such an admirable one, The Winter's Tale. When they've waited 16 years, Leontes, the king, when he touches the arm of Hermione, says, Oh, she's warm. The flesh is there, and he's been prepared to wait for it for 16 years. And all this is so transfiguring. I think we haven't the patience in the 20th century. Everything has to be grabbed and rushed more quickly.
So you would say that Shakespeare has the idea that if you give things time, that yes. It'll work out and that love may mature.
Yeah.
Well, now, would this be saying the same thing that he viewed love as a constant state?
Yes, except, of course, that he's aware, as every sensible human being is, that that love, of course, can abate sometimes. It can become less, and then you have to wait for it again.
And does this make us appreciate love when it's at its high point?
I really don't think that there is a more radiant, happy play in its ending than The Winter's Tale, where they've been without love for 16 years.
How does one know when one's in love? Now, that may sound like a stupid question, but from Shakespeare's point of view, did he ever comment on it?
Well, I think there is a feeling, surely, and certainly this is the case with Shakespeare's heroes and heroines, there's a feeling of absolute inevitability, isn't there? They know for absolute certainty that this is the thing.
And how do they know? What do they say?
I think they feel totally wrapped up in the other person. The Duke of Burgundy and the King of France are competing for the love of Cordelia. Burgundy is quite obviously more concerned for her wealth than for her person. But the Duke of France simply looks at her and he says, just Cordelia, herself, without possession. Cordelia looks at him and knows that is complete rest. They don't require any emotional demonstration. They know that the two personalities lock together, and that's quite adequate.
In other words, the chemistry is there.
Yes, I suppose we would say that, yes.
What about how a man feels love? Does he ever comment that, is this different than how a woman feels love in Shakespeare's plays?
When he does comment, as he does in Twelfth Night, that it's Orsino who says to Viola, we men see more, feel more, and so on, this is always ironic. It's very curious that Shakespeare always seemed to understand the power of women's love more powerfully, more greatly, than the power of men's love.
Well, now, why would this be, do you imagine?
I think that he must have had an enormous conception of the transforming quality of a woman's love, and perhaps a rather ironic feeling for the way in which men are absorbed in all kinds of other activities. That very moving final speech in The Taming of the Shrew, where Catherine says that women must be submissive to their husbands. I mean, she's almost preaching him a sermon, as if it were from a text by St. Paul. And when she says that women must be submissive in their love, she says at the same time, because men are out earning their bread, protecting the women, providing shelter for them, and so on. And I suppose that this is something that a man has to submit to. That he is a divided personality, whereas the woman, even if she is herself a very clever, very able woman, is all the time directed towards, orientated towards, her husband, the man she loves.
Do you think that Shakespeare felt then that man should be the predominant partner in love?
Oh, yes, I'm quite sure he felt this. In his own day, I don't think he could feel anything else. It was a male society. It was a male society in that all public office was held by men. Unlike our own, where office is open to both. But at the same time, what we shouldn't underestimate is the power that women had in private over these holders of public office. But very frequently, in a society like that, that looked an all-male society, women were in fact a great deal more powerful than they are today, when they appear to be competing with men on their own ground and not doing their own pious job.
Our guest tonight, Dr. Moylan Merchant, from the Department of English at the University of Exeter in Exeter, England. Our topic, Shakespeare on Love. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host Russ Gibb.
Our topic tonight on Night Call, Shakespeare on Love. Our guest, direct from England, Dr. Moylan Merchant. He is the head of the Department of English at the University of Exeter in Exeter, England. And this is our first transatlantic Night Call program. If you'd like to talk to the good doctor direct in England, give us a call here at area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Our operators are on duty, and the lines are open direct to England right now. So if you'd like to make a comment on Shakespeare or on love in general, or ask the doctor a question, give us a call here at Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. Dr. Merchant, we talked a little bit about the idea that Shakespeare felt that you had to know hate to know love. But how do we know that he felt this? Where does he tell us about hate in his writings?
Well, in a number of different ways. There's the feeling sometimes in the sonnet that when love has become power and has become lust, he uses some terrible phrases like an expensive spirit in a waste of shame is lust in action. That waste of shame eventually turns so sour that it becomes hatred. And sometimes also in a terrible play like Timon of Athens, which a great number of your listeners tonight probably saw in Stratford, Ontario 2 years ago with John Colicos playing a brilliant Timon. You've got there a man altogether without love. All his love for his fellow men turns into hatred when he realizes that all they want, it is wealth. And so that when you get Shakespeare exploring men without love, the sourness and the hatred become so overwhelming that you feel this is the one factor that's entirely missing from their makeup.
Do you feel that Shakespeare viewed love in a sexual sense? I mean, does he ever tell us that love is sex and that this could be sheer pleasure?
Oh, indeed. Very frequently. In the sonnets again, in the long poems. But you get these enormously passionate moments also in the play when you hear Juliet. Although Romeo and Juliet scarcely touch each other, as your last questioner said. You can't have anything much more sensuous, much more passionate than the way in which she even caresses the name, oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo, that kind of tone. Or, again, right at the end, in a character like Perdita in The Winter's Tale, where she is joking with her young lover, and she is distributing flowers for all the guests at the sheep shearing feast. She says that she wants to cover her lover with flowers. And he says, like a corpse? She replies quickly, no, quick, alive, quick, and in my arms. And this sort of passion is there all the time as a physical thing, not just as a mental, spiritual, or merely emotional thing.
Well, mentioning Romeo and Juliet brings me to a question.
Yes?
The idea that to most Americans, I think we think of Romeo and Juliet as synonymous with Shakespeare. And
yes,
we tend to think that this is the play where he deals with love in the greatest degree. Now, is this true?
Oh, no, I wouldn't agree. I think Romeo and Juliet is a very young play. It's one of his earliest. And if you were to ask me which is the one that explores it most deeply, I would put two complementary plays to you. Twelfth Night and Antony and Cleopatra. Antony and Cleopatra really explores it magnificently, doesn't it? Because this is middle-aged love.
What about the feeling that Shakespeare explores love, but he's actually exploring another situation? Let me see if I can say this.
Yeah.
That we get the feeling sometimes that he's not really dealing with love when he is dealing with it.
Yes.
In what plays would this be manifest?
Well, in for instance, Antony and Cleopatra. It would be a very difficult thing to say, wouldn't it, whether he's dealing with politics or with love there. Because with Antony representing Rome and order and power, and Cleopatra, Egypt, representing wealth and power again, these two falling in love mean that the whole of the Mediterranean basin is falling in love, so to speak, and falling into it over their heads. The result is that the thing becomes destructive. And it isn't until Antony is dead that Cleopatra is actually becoming a different and very much more important and bigger woman.
Doctor, I have a caller standing by in Montana now, a listener on KGHL, Miss Gwen Newman. Good evening, Gwen. You're on night call.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Should I ask him the question?
Yes, please do.
I would like to know, did Shakespeare feel that love was necessary in a society?
Was love necessary to his society?
Yes, if love was necessary in a society.
In any society, then?
Yes, absolutely essential in that society breaks down if there isn't both kinds of love. Love between men and men, women and women, on the one side, the love that we so meanly call homosexual now, and the love between men and women that simply keeps society welded together.
Uh-huh. And what examples did he use to prove that?
I'm sorry?
What examples did he use to prove that?
Every play that he wrote, from beginning to end.
I see.
When you get him, for instance, in the great central tragedy of King Lear. When he is asking there in the play, what quality, what sort of demonstration can the children give of their love to their father? The children demonstrate it so absolutely completely. When it comes to the end of the play, Cordelia is prepared to come back into a total, complete relationship with her father once more, and that means the restoration of the whole state of England at the end.
Gwen?
Yes?
Did the doctor answer your questions?
Yes, very well.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling Night Call, Miss Gwen Newman.
Good night.
Young lady from Montana, listener on KGHL. And let's go to Boston, Massachusetts now, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Sterling Hayden. Good evening, Sterling. Will you speak up? You're on night call, sir.
Well, I'd just like to ask you one question. I've been up to Gloucester, Mass. today. That's where I originally came from. I would like to ask you one question. As far as the Merchant of Venice versus Hamlet is concerned, does this gentleman in England feel that there is more love for a woman felt in Hamlet or in Merchant of Venice? In a general way. This is a very general question.
Doctor.
Can you interpret that for me, Ross? I think I got it, but can you repeat it?
Well, basically, he wants to know that in The Merchant of Venice, is there more love shown there than in Hamlet?
Right.
Yes. I think so. You see, in Hamlet, the two kinds of love that we've already been talking about, love of parent for child and child for parent, has completely broken. It's been destroyed by this murder of Hamlet's father.
Right.
So that at one point you get that terrible phrase where Ophelia is standing there waiting for Hamlet to come onto the stage. And she wants to return his gift. And you get, I suppose, pretty well the most desperate line in the play from Hamlet. I never gave Lucrezia because he doesn't trust her. On the other hand, in The Merchant of Venice, there's every kind of love. There's love of man for man, of Antonio for Bassanio. There's the love of the two main lovers, Bassanio and Portia. And that, incidentally, is a love that starts pretty meanly. It's covetousness. He wants her gold first. When he realizes what she is like and what her love can do, then he himself is transformed into something quite different. Does that answer the question?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sterling. Mr. Sterling Hagen from Boston, Massachusetts, a listener on WBAL. Let's go now out to Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Miss Ruth Daugherty. Good evening, Ruth. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
Thank you. I want to ask the doctor if the lovers in Romeo and Juliet are so very young, and yet to me it is the perfect and greatest love story of Shakespeare, and I wonder if he has any feeling as to, did he feel that Shakespeare thought young love was true love, and are there other examples and other stories?
Very interesting question, Ruth.
Yes.
Doctor?
Yes. When I said that it was a young play, of course I meant that it was a play by the young Shakespeare. It is also true, of course, that Juliet is very young. I believe, isn't she 14? And in fact, of course, this makes her mother somewhere about the age of 30, I suppose, or somewhat under. Now, I think here we've got to try to think ourselves back into a different sort of civilization where people mature very much earlier and where the expectation is, as in present-day India, that maturity will be so much younger, that love can be younger. I think possibly, though, that something of the freshness of the love in Romeo and Juliet also leads to a feeling in the play of immaturity and wildness and precipitousness, so that the tragedy can be felt coming from about the second act.
Ruth?
Yes, yes.
Are you there?
Yes, I am. But I didn't understand. Was he asking me a question?
No, he was making the last comment.
Yes. I wonder if you feel that, for instance, the two lovers in Romeo and Juliet are as mature as, shall we say, the lovers later in his work, in plays like The Tempest and The Winter's Tale.
Well, as I say, maybe it was because I just saw it this summer at Stratford in Connecticut.
Yes.
And was so impressed.
Yes.
With it. I had read it and knew of the play, but
yes,
to see it was so different and so wonderful. And I didn't remember that, you know, the people were so young in other plays.
Yes.
And I thought this was a very, very great love.
Yes. Were they played young?
Yes.
I see, they were two young players.
Yes, they really were.
Yes.
Quite young.
Yes.
I don't know how young.
No.
But they were, and I was so glad that they were young, because to me it would certainly be very miscast to have anyone older.
Yes.
Ruth, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your comments. Ms.
Thank
Ruth
you.
Daugherty from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN.
Our guest tonight is Dr. Moylan Merchant, and he is head of the Department of English at the University of Exeter in Exeter, England. And he's talking to us tonight on Night Call direct from England. Our topic, Shakespeare on Love. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America, busy America, busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with the you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a
little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him. It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. This is Gibb, and we have standing by at the University of Exeter in Exeter, England, a Shakespearean scholar, Dr. Moylan Merchant. And he is the head of the Department of English at the university. And our topic tonight on Night Call, Shakespeare on Love. Now, if you'd like to ask the doctor a question on Shakespeare or make a comment on love, you may talk to the doctor direct by calling area code 313-84-66601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station, and we'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear what you think about love, and we'd like to hear what you think about Shakespeare. The number to call is area code 313-84-66601. And remember, you may make the call collect if you wish. Area code 313-84-666-01. Dr. Merchant, we've talked a great deal about love, but part of love is jealousy. Does Shakespeare ever deal with jealousy in any of the plays or poems?
Yes, a number of times, but of course two plays deal with it almost exclusively. In Othello, and of course in The Winter's Tale. I'm sorry, you'll think that I'm plugging The Winter's Tale. It's a wonderful play. But in Othello, you get this business of two different races marrying. The very noble Moor, Othello, marrying the young Venetian girl. Suddenly you realize that by the machinations of someone outside of Iago, who is simply hate incarnate. That is, he doesn't give any motive for his hate at all. Jealousy has hit Othello, and at once the whole of his personality transforms. Shakespeare does this by mentioning just one image, that the whole of his mind and soul have become like a cistern, full of toads and venomous creatures. And this is the quality of his mind at this point.
Is jealousy actually, as Shakespeare views it, love overdone, as it were?
It's love asking the wrong question.
I see.
And expecting the wrong reaction.
Doctor, we have callers now in Baltimore, Maryland. A listener on WBAL, Mr. Sam Mills.
Hello.
Hello, Sam. You're on Night Call, sir. Your comment, please.
Well, I simply wanted to speak on the subject of love, not necessarily connected with Shakespeare.
Yes, sir.
And I have been listening to the program for quite a bit. And I would like to express myself on the subject of love in this essence, that no one has yet touched upon the fact that love basically is giving. Giving of oneself without any reward anticipated.
Doctor?
Yes.
Does Shakespeare ever comment?
Beg pardon?
Yes, exactly.
I can't hear you.
I think he does. Again, some of the women appear to be capable of this.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Are you hearing me?
Hello, Sam.
Yes.
The doctor's going to make a comment now on your comment about love is giving. Doctor, go ahead.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to turn my radio off.
Okay.
For instance, to go back to Quill Smythe again, Viola appears to be, well, content would be an exaggerated word, but she appears to be willing to allow her love simply to be a protective, patient thing. She is quite capable of going to another home and asking for Olivia's love asking for any reward is something that undoubtedly Shakespeare does depict very fully. This, of course, ultimately, I suppose, is a theological rather than an emotional or a dramatic matter.
But he deals with it in all areas, doesn't he?
Oh, yes.
Sam, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Mr. Sam Mills from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. Let's go again to Baltimore, a listener on WBAL, Mr. William Winchester. Good evening, William. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
I don't know whom I'm speaking to because I came in late.
Okay, you're talking now to Russ
right.
Gibb in the United States, and our guest is Dr. Moylan Merchant, and he's in Exeter, England. Yes, sir.
I'm picking up a phrase of his, which ends, so meanly called homosexuality. And we're on the general subject of love. In the book, what we call the Book of Life, there is discussion of this subject, and when God became displeased with man was when man united together in a form of love which was displeasing to him. We love each other. Well, there is an indication in the book that this homosexuality, as we know it today, was an unnatural relationship between men. We love each other. There are many kinds of love. Love of man for man. But there's a strong indication that we should not practice homosexuality as is known today, and this is the dirty understanding of it.
Yes, well, Doctor Merchant, does Shakespeare ever comment about love for man? In other words, the homosexual type of love?
Yes, well, I think we've got to look at this a good deal more squarely and perhaps more analytically than we do.
I can hardly hear you, Doctor.
Hello?
He's having difficulty hearing you, Doctor.
I see. All right. I'll try to speak more loudly. I think that we assume far too readily that every love has to have a physical expression. There are all kinds of love that do not need this physical expression.
Well, then we're in complete agreement, Doctor.
Yes. Yes, I think if that's the implication of your question, I would agree wholeheartedly. But I think, you see, that in a play, for instance, like The Merchant of Venice, relationships between men and relationships between women can be very intense without demanding anything like the physical expression that the other form of sexual love does.
Right. Well, see, now here in the United States, about the only time we hear about this is in a connotation that denotes unpleasant relationships.
Yes, but at the same time, there are great numbers of men who have very intense friendships and great numbers of women who have very intense friendships. This is necessary for a balanced human personality. And I think it's a great pity that we now somehow seem to find this a dangerous fact about men and women.
Right, well, now, that's why I figure that if we're being heard on the air, that it's valuable to get this out in the open and not sub rosa.
Yes, I agree.
Bill, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Good night.
Good night, sir. Mr. William Winchester from Baltimore, Maryland. And we have a caller in Denver, Colorado now, a listener on KTLN, Lucy Harms. Good evening, Lucy. Your comment.
My name is not Lucy, dear. It's Lucille.
I'm sorry?
Lucille Harms in Denver.
Yes, Lucille.
And I'd like to ask the good doctor. By the way, we'd like for him to come out here to our beautiful city of Denver, too.
Doctor, have you ever been to Denver?
No, never.
I agree with Lucille. It is a beautiful city.
It certainly is. I'd like to ask the doctor, if Shakespeare were alive today, I wonder who he would consider the greatest lovers, whether it would be Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, or would it be Princess Margaret and Lord Snowdon?
Now there is a question.
That is a question.
You're really putting me on the spot, aren't you?
I can't hear you, Doctor.
You're really putting me on the spot. I think I would have to plump for your second pair.
Mrs. Margaret and Lord Snowden are coming to the United States, and we openly invite them to come to the Queen City of the Plains, Denver, Colorado.
Well, I'm sure you'd enjoy their company.
I'm sure they would enjoy ours, too.
Lucille, thank you. Thank you for calling Night Call.
Miss
Lucille Harms in Denver, Colorado, a lady that's listening on KTLN. And she had quite a question there.
Yes.
Doctor?
Yes?
I think we have about 30 seconds.
Uh-huh.
What's the most poignant thing that Shakespeare has said on love, in your opinion?
Oh, I think this matter of the total restoration of human personality that comes through it. When one comes to the last plays, the fact that human beings find themselves so completely in each other and find restoration and the setting aside of all the tragedies that seem to be besetting them before that seems to me to be the most moving single fact.
And do you think that we could possibly today gain a better understanding of this word called love if we were to read Shakespeare seriously?
Oh, I'm quite sure. And I'm quite certain, too, that a very great deal of the attraction of his plays for young people lies precisely in that fact. The hundreds of thousands that in America and in England, in Germany, well, all over the world, see him every year.
Doctor, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call. We certainly enjoyed your comments, and frankly, the idea that you're now in England and we're here in the Midwest, it sort of amazes me, and the fact that you'd get up at this hour. What time is it in England, by the way?
It's now 8 o'clock.
In the morning.
8 o'clock in the morning. Just about breakfast time. I can smell mine coming up.
Well, we're going to go to bed here, and Doctor, thank you for being our guest on Night Call. Dr. Moylan Merchant, who is head of the Department of English at the University of Exeter in Exeter, England. Our topic tonight was Shakespeare on Love. Tomorrow night on Night Call, our guest is Mr. T. George Harris. He's the senior editor of Look magazine. Our topic, How Can Protestantism Survive Its Turmoil? Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.